Zone?
How are you today?
So I'm going to call the Subcommittee on Information Technology to order. And we're going to have some informational meeting this morning, or this afternoon, rather. I was in the floor session so long I forgot what hour it is, but so if you can, you know, let us know what we're doing, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Chair Riley, members of the committee, today is the second day of a statewide IT overview. We have with us today Dr. Alex Pettit. We had anticipated having Michael Jordan, the DAS director and chief operating officer, with us today also, but he was unfortunately unable to attend. So again, this will be a continuation of last Thursday's meeting. Also, as time permits, Dr. Pettit will talk a bit about the Office of the State Chief Information Officer and the DAS Enterprise Technology Services Division. Both offices and or divisions reside within DAS, and one of the topics this committee wanted to hear was how the two offices interplay, how they work together, how they provide services to state government. So,
okay, thank you. So with that, have at it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alex Pettit. I am the Chief Information Officer for the state of Oregon. And just go through my slides here. I'll get through them as quickly as I can. I got 44 informational slides and 10 more in the appendix. So I'll probably cut off at that if we get through that far. But please give me questions and contacts like we did the last time, and I'd appreciate it very much. So first thing I want to talk about is the ETS review that we've done. One of the things I was asked to do was to identify, it was 8 years ago that the Scenic Project was launched and the State Data Center was formed, and it's morphed into the Enterprise Technology Services Group. One of the things that occurred to us was that it was time to do an evaluation of their services and ascertain what should they be doing, what shouldn't they be doing, how should the services be subscribed to or not subscribed to, and really just kind of re-baseline what it is we're doing and for who and why. So our objective was to, first of all, determine or decide on what is a utility service, the definition of what a utility service is. Utility meaning that everyone must use the service and that the rates are equalized or postalized across, kind of like electricity or something like that, so that you're not... I don't pay more for postal service out in, you know, Godibo, Oklahoma than I do in Portland, Oregon. So I don't know the rural places in Oregon yet, so I can't use an appropriate analogy here. We formed a work group, SWAT team structure and members. We had an outcome summary, SWAT team recommendations for what services should be utility, outstanding issues and discussion, and then our next steps here we'll talk about at the end, so or at the end of this portion of it. So very quickly, the first meeting was to define IT governance and the definition of a utility, kind of set that out, what were our principles or boundaries or process, and then who were our teams that were getting together. And we started with the ETS catalog of services, and we did our review of utilities that everyone should use, identification of shared services that we felt was a managed market, and then the agency, the open market, the bespoke, those unique services to the agency, like in the pyramid I showed you the last time. So we were asking what good for which people at whose cost. You know, that's the ultimate question of governance, right? All right, so agencies that were on the SWAT teams, this is just a... You know, we had folks from all over the place, some small agencies, some large agencies, so lots of people from lots of different places that sat in on the groups to have the discussion with us. What is a utility? We defined it as a service where it makes sense to have a single supplier for all users when balancing the economies of scale, the need for one integrated system, a strong need for uniformity, and core business objectives are not impacted by a lack of customization. A service can also be declared utility for compelling policy reasons. A utility service has a community benefit whether or not everyone takes advantage of the service. Think of a road. So not everybody has vehicles. Some people can't get out, yet they still benefit from a road because it's how groceries are delivered or fire service gets together or what have you. So that's a road is a utility service. Customers of utility services may be local government entities, individual state agencies, and other public entities that may choose how much to purchase, but for any of the reasons cited above, the choice of supplier is limited to one or more designated sources. So trying to keep that, trying to leverage that uniformity and the cost structure and what have you. All right, so we go through the ETS catalog. Yes, sir. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Chair Riley, thank you. You're fine, Mr. Pettit. You talk about utilities. It's a service that everybody uses and that doesn't need any customization. And one of the things getting in some of the other committees that I'm on is, like, for instance, the DMV is talking about using credit cards. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of astounded that there would be any entity that's that large in the year 2015 that wouldn't take credit cards. But is it possible that that kind of service could be a utility service? In other words, the state of Oregon would contract with one fell swoop with the credit card processing thing. I'm not sure if I know how that works. And then when you did that, you would buy a Oregon driver's license, and that would be a certain SKU, or you would buy a hunting license from ODFW, or you'd buy a whatever permit from whatever agency, or pay your speeding ticket from, you know, whatever. So is there a possibility to do that with credit card processing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nierman, the direct answer is yes, there is. It's going to take, there's several nuances that have to be worked out. In my previous assignment, I was one of the things we did was we did unify licensing. We had 1,542 license types in the state of Oklahoma. And so we had to create a unified licensing process. And that was one of the things I spoke to the predecessor of this committee last year a little bit about the project that we had put together for it and what have you. And we did. We unified merchant accounts. We unified how the process went. We standardized it. And it took us a couple of years to get through it, about 3.5 years to get through it. So the direct answer to the question is yes. That's not a project that's been that's gotten a lot of traction here for a variety of reasons, but it's certainly it's not a technology limitation.
Thank you.
Existing ETS catalog of services, application services, data network services, data storage services, IT professional services, managed computing services, and workplace productivity services. These are the things where the differences don't make a difference, like I talked about the last time. These are the things where dial tone is dial tone is dial tone. A ping is a ping is a ping. You can't tell how you get to Google unless you do a trace route, and nobody really cares how they get to Google. You know, you just type google.com, it comes up, and you're happy. So those are things that it really doesn't matter. The provider, it doesn't matter. All that matters is the service available and what's the cost. You know, so that's really fundamentally the most simplistic definition of a utility service. So they came up with 19 services, and they broke them up into this is kind of the short list or the general list of buckets: e-government services, managed computing, data storage and backup, network services, and workplace productivity. So the groups came up with, they said, these are the 19 or so services that we think should be utility across the state. And then they recommended other services: mobile device management, GIS, identity management, access management, and so on. Those are things that the teams recommended in addition to the core 19 that need further exploration. And so now those have been turned over to a group for common IT service delivery. You know, so basically the transformation of ETS is what we're talking about here. So the IT utility advisory team, that's a group of seven of us, CIOs from different agencies around the state. We're getting together and coming through and doing a deep dive on those 19 services and identifying what can be done in the near term, what needs to be done in the longer term, to bring forward a recommendation to the agency IT business teams and finance teams, to bring forward to the IT governance steering committee and enterprise leadership team a request to in this budget cycle to begin that transformation process. So that's really how we're going to go about doing it there. Now, before I get into the ETS, this is the ETS piece to it. This is specific about ETS. So ETS does not report to me. ETS reports to a peer of mine, Sarah Jo Chapman. She's a peer manager of mine, and she reports to Michael Jordan. So, but I'm going to give this part of the presentation. Being a technologist, I understand the nuts and bolts of it very well. So,
so let me interrupt you for a second. Why wouldn't this portion report to the state CIO?
So prior to my arrival, the state of Oregon has separated IT policy from IT service delivery, and not only IT policy, but other policy areas as well, HR policy and services such as the procurement and IT, and so they're separated. So they have a policy group where my role is to, as the policy director, is to develop policies and oversight for the entire state. ETS and other organizations that are service delivery don't necessarily serve the entire state. They serve some subset. They're the service provider to them. So that's how this was broken into. That's the logic behind it. So ETS. So they have an administrator. They've got six teams: service solutions, engineering, service delivery, plans and controls, availability management, and application delivery. So instead of organizing by what we would call tower or technology, so networking and servers, open systems, and they've tried to organize around what the customer need is. So this is actually a model based upon something Gartner had done, and what they've done is organize around the things that way they can improve service delivery to the customer, so that it's not, you don't get as many of these what we call betweeners. You know, you don't have things that are, well, it's not the application's fault, it's the mainframe folks' fault or the server's fault, or no, it's not us, it's the networking folks' fault, or it's not the networking. So this has been an attempt to do that. That's what this whole design is behind doing. And they have lots of customers: agencies, boards and commissions, cities and counties, educational service districts, and other stuff. So what you see, one of the things that I had passed out was the listing of all the agencies, state agencies, counties, municipalities, such that in one way, shape, or form use the services of ETS. And so and as you can see, it's quite a varied list people who are, or entities that utilize the services. So small counties, big counties, municipalities, and what have you. It's been a good model for them. Kind of a quick summary here. You know, so somebody needs to access state services. So either state employees, citizens, or businesses need to go, need to go through Secretary of State's office to license a business. A citizen may need to or may desire transparency information. A state employee may need to go through and telecommute for work or something like this. They go through a security services. That's supposed to be a firewall there. It basically goes through and says who should get what and no more and no less than what access they should have. And then they get to the respective computing service that they need or require. They may tap into storage services that sit behind that, that then come back and actually it should go through the firewall again and then give that to the whoever it is requesting it. So that's ultimately the design, you know. All right, so lots of different state business areas in healthcare, the Health Alert Network, Oregon State Hospital, Food Benefits System, Medicaid eligibility, public safety, of course, in traffic check, law enforcement data systems, juvenile justice, corrections, criminal records. A lot of these systems are hosted by ETS. In other words, they're the custodians of the services. They don't own the data. They don't have sovereignty over the data. They don't provide the services above really the very basic, you know, they make sure that it's turned on and that it's backed up and that's available. They're responsible for availability of the services. The actual application and security of the application and the management of that is done by the agencies themselves. Those are considered bespoke or unique to the agency. But the platform itself is hosted by ETS. Revenue there with state income tax system, corporate tax, child support, and online mobile payments. And this is a really busy slide here, but basically what they want to illustrate is, you know, you've got 250 services, over 250 services in eGov. You've got 1,800 applications over there under servers for the different agencies that are supported, mid-range applications and mainframe applications. So, again, and what's important is that at the point of demarcation, the point where ETS's responsibility ends and the agency begins, is generally at the custodial level of responsibility. They are the custodians of the systems. They're not sovereigns to the system. Those remain with the agencies under today. So. All right, so ETS benefits to customers. Agency IT resources can focus on agency business applications rather than the infrastructure. Increased or improved security, behind the scenes, 24/7 monitoring and 24/7/365 on-site staffing at the data center. DR, which we'll talk about in a minute, and then online and mobile payment processing. So we do a lot of all the online and mobile data, online payment processing, as you had asked about, Representative. So it was my, when I was new here in Oregon, one of the first things I got to do early on was accept the award for the state for their disaster recovery design, which was really from the National Association of State CIOs. So that was kind of a good benefit there. They have come up with a 10 gigabyte trunk line that we have between us and Helena, and the two organizations, state of Montana and the state of Oregon, share, you know, back each other up. We have a virtual tape library, VTL, over in Montana and vice versa here. And what we can do for either side, you can bring up an LPAR, it's a partition in a mainframe, and we can stand up essential systems that we have, payroll and payables and things like that, in a hurry. So they had run a test of this a little while ago and had run, I don't remember how long, I should remember that story. It was either 2 or 3 days or something, but they had actually run it, and it worked very well for them. So it was in a test environment. It wasn't in a live environment, but they're sure that will work for them. And so it was a very good example of interstate cooperation and leveraging each other, you know, the making best value out of taxpayer-funded systems, that instead of having to go to instead of having to pay external for it, we could help one another as a community. So that was a big benefit. So online citizen services, this is a very big and getting bigger market, you know. So e-government program enables public internet services, websites, e-commerce, licensing, mobile, open data collaboration. Lots of money collected online. 165 different websites, 52 online payment apps, 25 custom applications, 16 are online licensing payments. Provides agencies with low-risk funding options and legislative oversights by the advisory board. So basically, it's a way that we've been able to, in cooperation with NIC, we've been able to bring services that otherwise wouldn't be available to small licensing boards and commissions and groups like that. So being able to have systems so that folks can get their licenses online instead of having to come in and instead of having somebody have to stand that up themselves or as a one-off, they can get some collaboration by going through a single vendor. Now, we haven't unified it, the process, like we had done in Oklahoma, but this has been very beneficial for the small agencies.
It's a good start,
yes sir. All right, so this is their growth chart, ETS's growth chart here, and this includes all kinds of things. This includes storage. This is basically in a simplified bar graph, you know, compute power, storage, networking capacity, all the things that they provide as a service to the agencies. And starting at the first year first biennium 2005-2007 as their baseline, you can see that their growth has not quite been exponential, but it's gone up by a couple hundred, 300% nearly. So it's grown significantly over the past 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 biennium. So that's quite rapid, you know. And one of the reasons it hasn't been higher, you can see the costs haven't mirrored that. So, you know, that's that line represents the midpoints of all the previous bar charts. The bars here in this case are the budget. And the reason the budget hasn't increased at the same rate as the services have is because we've been able to get, you know, values from scalability. So when we go to, and we'll have there's a neat little chart in that coming up in a second here on this presentation that illustrates it graphically. But what you'll see is that they've been able to give greater return for the smaller investments, and it's done well. So setting technology service rates based upon what each service costs and customer utilization, shared responsibility for state technology spend, and economizing to create shared services and negotiation of pricing based upon those economies of scale. So they've done well with that. Increasing demands on services require faster, more secure solutions. Technology usage is driven by how much business and citizens use agency services. Keeping pace with citizen expectations of state government's use of technology. Increasing desire for the mobility of technology, fast pace of advancements, aging technology infrastructure required increased investment for replacement. So, as you all know, last year one of the things that ETS has struggle with was initially there was an investment made and then no investment was made for a long time in sustainment of the services. Now they're in a situation where they needed to do a replacement to some big items, particularly the core switch and things like that were, what, 2005? So how long is that? It's been a long time, you know, 10 years old or so. So that's a long time for switches for a core to go on for a networking. So they're in the position where they have to replace their core. In addition to that, they've converted to a pay-as-you-go thing. So they've not only got to pay to come up to speed currently, we've also got to pay if we're going to, so that the next time we don't get we're not in a situation where we're having to play catch up again in 10 years where we have a plan for a replacement. And so that's been a real struggle for us. So, but this is the one I really like. So as you see, you know, at the beginning there, 2006-2009, they kind of just, it was like the United States. We just took you as you were, you know. So we got some, all kinds of different racks in there, you know, and you've got your compact racks, you got your, you know, IBM racks, all kinds of different racks, all kinds of different equipment, all kinds of different solutions. Over the course of the next 5 years, they worked to standardize that build. And so you've got the HP virtual machine systems there. They've expanded the Hitachi storage array. And then, of course, the Cisco is kind of the same. You know, they just added an extra cabinet to that. But still, that's kind of the same stuff in the networking. Where they're going to is this unified computing platform where a single device has the virtual machine, has the storage, has the network all in it. It's going to cut the use of the data center by two-thirds. So we're going to get a lot of open space in the data center here. And they have gotten a lot of open space in the data center recently. So they've been very successful with that, with doing it. That's something that's actually in progress today what you want to call it, conversion of technology and what that affords us in terms of what we can do with the data center. So I love that slide. I think it's a great graphic. Okay, so let's mention a little bit about the life cycle replacement. Approved to proceed in 2014 with an estimated five-year cost of a little under $50 million. Project was initialized and procurement vehicles are finalized. So I'm the hitch in the get-along is what Mr. Jordan would say, is that I've slowed this project down while we have started to work through the utility services definition. So the reason that we're not quite as far along as they had hoped was because It's very important to know for the network, are we going to be doing layer one, layer two, or layer three type work? So, you know, it's going to be, it's one of those things. Am I only going to get dark fiber and I got to do the electronics? Does somebody do the electronics and I only do the, you know, I only have to provision it by port, or is somebody going to do it end to end for us? And so those are all questions right now that aren't clear to us. Where it is that our responsibilities begin, what is it that should be a utility service? So we're working through that now. As a consequence, I've needed to take a pause for me to get myself caught up with what the right answer is here, because I don't know what it is yet, or my team doesn't know the answer. That's why we started with the ETS review. And so the ETS lifecycle target dates, so this is where they're at in time and space, a very busy chart, but it's helpful to kind of see, and then this one was done for mid-January there. But as we track along, where we are, what's getting done, who's doing it, security cameras are done, intrusion tools are working, and we'll talk about that at an upcoming session of this where I talk about a budget note I got. The data center work is being done. Field switches and routers, that's the one in where I've particularly gotten in the way. Field servers is getting done. And then the security infrastructure is the migration of the firewalls. And that's one I've gotten in the way as well, as the provisioning of and just the definition of multi-tenant type architecture for that. So I've asked them some questions that we're confused at a higher level now. So we got to figure that out before we can go forward. Okay, so future opportunities, like I said, we started off with the reevaluation of what is a utility service, what businesses should we be in. Outsourcing telephony to a third-party vendor, we're doing that now. I'd like to say that we've completed that contract, but I don't know that that's true. I know we're very close to it. We're in the final negotiations with the vendor who's been the winner of that, and we will be sourcing all the phone services out. We currently have a Meridian One type architecture, Nortel Meridian One architect. We'll be getting that converted over to voice over IP, and so that'll all be. So basically, we're going from a hardware design to a software design. You know,
who's the vendor for that?
Well, I don't know if I can tell you or not. We're doing the one-on-one with them, and we're in the final.
There's no contract yet, is what you're telling me.
There's no contract yet, yes, sir. So
I got it.
A whisker away. So, improving IT security. 112 is the security and IT operations and audit support. Real-time budgeting of new agency demand. And so one of the things that we used to do in the past before StageGate was we had agencies come forward and they'd look for all their money up front for something, and that would include ETS's money to support it. Now we've said, yeah, we're not going to do that. As the agency gets their request together, well, we start off, we'll fund their business plan, and then we'll fund their high-level plan, then we give them money to do a detail plan, and then we give them money to do execution. So those things are going to come as we see fit to move those things forward. And then those are the two packages that didn't move forward, 115, 116. But the real-time budgeting of new agency demand, these are the ones that are moving forward, support growth and customer usage of IT, and support usage growth for DAS. So let's get into the legacy system upgrade. So this is the HRIS, all those, the procurement, procure to pay, all the stuff around our budgeting and payroll and all that kind of good stuff. So where we have, so really our view is there are things, as I said before, there are things that should be unified or standardized or utility. Payroll should be a utility service. Everybody should do payroll. So there's no reason to have 132 payroll systems out there. On the other hand, there are things that should be specific to the agencies. And those things that are specific to the agencies, we need to be able to support them with our. So, for instance, a payroll system that does not support the agency's reporting of project activity to their federal partner is not a very good centralized system. So right now, one of the things we do here in Oregon, and we must be one of the last states left, because I thought I was the last state in Oklahoma, and we converted. So we've got to be one of the last ones, is we still do anticipatory pay, to where we pay once a month, and we pay anticipating what you're going to work the last couple of days of work before so we can cut the check and do the wire transfer early. Well, that costs the state of Oregon money, just like it did us in Oklahoma, because we have to rerun payroll because our federal partners won't accept anticipatory estimates. So you have to rerun payroll in order to get the actuals that the person works so that you can job cost or you can cost out what they work specifically on which initiative, which project. So you're running multiple payrolls a month. I can't tell you how many exactly here. In Oklahoma, we were running four payrolls every month, even though we said we were only paying once a month. It cost me four payrolls a month. That ended up costing me about $5 million a year in more expense than I needed to be running. So one of the things we did is we converted to a biweekly paying in arrears, and then that way we had actuals that we could report to our federal partners, and then cut down. So instead of doing four payrolls a month, I only had to do two a month. It was a big improvement. And I could use a standardized payroll system. I didn't have to customize a payroll system to do once a month payroll. Nobody does anticipatory payroll anymore. Or if there are, I promise you, I don't know who they are. I think I've touched them all now. So that'll be one of those things. That's why I mean these are business processes that have to be transformed, and they have to support the agency's activities. They're reporting with their federal partners or whatever. Those have to be understood before we jump into something. So we had Deloitte come in. We did a lab, we brought in folks from, so we did a number of things. We did a survey to several folks, 60 or so people. We got them to fill out a survey for us. We did a multi-voting, asking them which systems were urgently needed to be replaced and which ones weren't. And then in the lab, we had about 40 or so people show up from all sorts of agencies, including the LFO, to participate in helping us devise and design and prioritize our systems that needed to be replaced. So we went through and as you can see, the HRIS system was hot on red all the way across. So that one everybody agreed with was our highest priority one that we needed to get. That's PICS and PPDB. Those were the ones that needed to be addressed most urgently. Next one being payroll. I've already talked about that. Budgeting and analytics, and then procurement there. So, but the first one was certainly HRI. So we came up with a upgrade path, and we developed this in the lab, and then everybody, this is what we came out with. We went through where we had to do, and you can see on HCM, Human Capital Management, we've completed the business case. We had our first blush with the RFP. I got a chance to look through it. We've sent it back for some changes there that we've asked for. So it's not ready to be released yet, but we're working on it. And they've gone through and documented some 43 processes that need to be across the agencies that they've agreed need to be standardized, that we're going to look for a standard solution to do for us all. We're hoping that as we move forward with y'all through this, that we'll release the RFP here shortly, get the responses, and then work with you on figuring out how we can do the implementation and then bring it into life here in the next, well, I say there, over the next 3-4 years. So 3 years. So that's the one we're furthest along across. Financing grants, budgeting and analytics, those are kicked out a few years, a few years. And then procurement, Secretary of State started a process. We're going to see how that goes and support them through it. That's kind of the coalition of the willing there that want to go through and do that. And we certainly don't want to. We want to support their initiative. We don't want to. But they're working on their business case and their process standardization, and that's going to be a heavy lift, I'm afraid. So, and it wasn't as high of a priority as the HCM was. So, Okay. So now I'm going to jump into quality assurance and quality control. And I don't know why I didn't put IVMV up there, independent validation and verification. But that's one of the things. Those are things out of my office that we do. It's really associated with oversight and oversight of major IT projects. So current statewide QA policy, technology investment strategy and development, monitor the business projects with a major IT component. It defines the planning and oversight expectations for different projects categories. So we got three categories. And then ensures QA resources, sponsorship, and project management discipline are applied through the entire investment lifecycle. So, and right now, the way that this happens is the agency goes through, and with our cooperation, they solicit for a QA QC vendor off a list of approved vendors. The agency holds the contract. An analyst works with them, with the LFO staff, to oversee the project. These are only... We've promoted these more and more into the development of the business case and in the development of the detailed project plan. In some cases, QA hasn't started until even as late as execution on occasion. But by and large, they start before then. So, and we've worked very hard to get more and more into the front end of the process and get a quality business case and a quality plan developed. All right, so the primary responsibility for project oversight rests with the DAS director and then by delegation to me. The Office of the State CIO and the LFO partner to provide oversight on projects with a major IT component on behalf of the executive and legislative branches of government, primarily through assessments performed by the QA contractor, participation in the steering committees, review of ongoing agency project status reports, status interviews with project managers and contractors, and then independent review and analysis. So Ying, Ed, Darren, Nick, and I do a lot of that. So it takes, you know, there's about 20 or so that are in flight, and, you know, it's a lot. There's a lot going on. LFO principal analysts there with Sean and Bob, and we rely on Sean and Bob a lot, especially when we've got other stuff going on, unfortunately. So we make a good partnership, I think, on that, you know, to oversee those projects. Projects with a major IT component. State's most strategic critical IT investment under QA oversight. So about 2020, this is the slide I warned you I had in here twice, you know, so it gives good context on both sides. So 2020, 16, 17, 16, 18, 18, so, you know, right around 20, 2023, right there at the end of November. We're expecting that's going to go up very significantly following the upcoming QA policy adoption. That's going to be where new rules are in place for what really needs to be overseen with quality assurance. You know, and that's going to change the game quite a bit. And so that's one of the reasons for our POP is to be able to. And that's the reason we've delayed it, is because we just don't have the capacity right now to.
Let me stop you for a minute. I want to see if anyone has. We've gone through a lot of stuff.
I need a drink.
Great. I wanted to see if anyone has any questions at this point. I guess not. So, when you're ready, continue
well, good.
On. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, it's we're kicking right along here. Time it is real quick. Oh, good. It's only quarter two. So current investment values range from approximately $1.3 million for the OHA home visiting data system to the ODOT radio project. So that's, you know, that kind of gives you a kind of scope as to from the low end to the high end what they all are. So we have an established price agreement with 11 QA firms, and we go through a rotation of those firms. So the same firm doesn't keep winning the bid over and over again. We have tried in the past to limit, because a lot of projects in a discipline will look the same. So when you get certain projects and certain cadence from OHA, DHS, those projects are going to have a certain methodology, a certain and in the interest of trying to be the most efficient, we have tried to work as much as we can with the, you know, ODOT and DHS, OHA with a primary QA QC vendor, but in for a variety of reasons, that since I've come in, I've kind of liked to vary it up a bit. So I've been trying to encourage more of a traditional rotation back to, you know, getting folks to getting fresh eyes on a project, particularly for projects that span multiple years. Sometimes we had a situation where maybe one of them was there a little long and things were overlooked because they just were too much involved in the process. So it helps to have a rotation, I believe. QA contractors, agencies are required to use a standard framework of work, standard standards and metrics, standard reporting templates. One of the things that I'm going to be asking for as we go forward is a greater rigor around function points, so that we view things by the number. Function points is a metric for size. So in the old days, we would measure things by number of lines of code. Now it's by function points. So when you get higher order languages, fewer statements do more things. So in Word or Excel, bold is a function point. It's something that when you press bold, it bolds the, so we call that a function point. Italic, underline, strike through, those are all function points. Word has about 1,500 function points. That gives you kind of the complexity of Microsoft Word. On the other hand, the child support system has about, the one that we had in Oklahoma had about 30,000 function points. That's about the complexity to do child support payments. That gives you the complexity of about an iPhone. That's about the same complexity as what you find in an iPhone. So you kind of get, PeopleSoft has about 200,000 function points. So that's an enterprise resource planning solution. So that kind of gives you an idea as to complexity.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's something that came up today. It's been brewing for a few weeks, an issue in the human services area, and it's around how a program is administered, but IT is involved in everything somewhere, right? And so there is a software program that's being used, and a lot of people are having a lot of trouble with it. And when I think about number of function points as being a measure of complexity, I'm thinking, well, here we had something that isn't working well, and we have literally thousands of people across the state who are adversely impacted. It's costing a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of grief, aggravation. It probably didn't meet a test for how much it cost to make the change to the system that started doing this. So it wasn't going to get reviewed based on cost. It was an existing system that got some embellishments, I think you might say, rather than a new system. And what if it didn't have that many function points to meet a test of complexity? Is there a point at which you evaluate projects and your need to be involved, you in the more general sense, your need to be involved, not based on literally the number of dollars involved for the work or the complexity, but based on is it mission critical or how many thousands of people might be adversely impacted by this if it goes wrong?
Madam Chair, yes, ma'am. So there is the problem with metrics like that is they're very spurious. It's very difficult to ascertain very often how significant something is to an organization or to a merchant code or online payment system may be extraordinarily critical, but really have relatively few function points. You're absolutely correct. It's difficult to ascertain, to handicap something like that and know, and it's a judgment call in a lot of cases. So those are much harder to structure. But on the other side of it, the number of function points generally is a very good indicator of risk, so that the larger, the greater number of function points you have in something, the larger a program is, the more complicated it is, the more likely something's going to bite us. And so I would submit to you that although an imperfect metric, at least it's empirical. Right now we haven't had, when I inherited the office of the state CIO, we didn't have as many empirical measurements of that nature. We had dollars. But as you say, those can be, especially if it's internal work, you know, those can be. We had significance to the organization, and those can be very opaque. You know, they're very difficult to ascertain. Number of function points is an absolute, and so I'm trying very hard to move my group in that direction because of its empirical nature of the metric. Because if I know I'm talking about implementing or developing from scratch something as complicated as Microsoft Word, that's very different than Department of Justice and what they're doing around child support. They have a very complicated system, or the Department of Motor Vehicle system, which is going to have tens of thousands of function points, or the ERP solution, as I spoke of earlier tonight, the HRIS and the number of function points. So, but I do appreciate very much your concern, and we will try hard to identify those and ascertain the significance to the agency, you know, for those. So,
thank you.
So target date, as I say, is July 1st. That's in respect to the what we're hoping for, POP 105. Our QA contract statement of work to be revised to align with House Bill 4122. So I'm a year and change over on getting that done. Preliminary quality assurance services coming up on 2 years, I guess. Ongoing quality management services, refresh QA standards and rating criteria. The Office of the State CIO and the Legislative Fiscal Office work together to refresh, standardize the oversight process, criteria, and standards. Contractual and fiscal relationship and the State of Oregon will change. We're going to look for a new bundle of them to come in. So, you know, we're going to go through and basically restructure all of our contracts and contractors, and so our expectation is we'll have a different bunch of them in there. There will be some that will carry over. There are some very good, but we would like to see. Right now we have 11, and we'd like to see more to go through that process. So, for new executive branch projects, we will execute and manage the QA contracts and cost recovery from the agencies. So we will need to ask for it's not a budget increase, but a allotment increase, you know, see, I'm not used to this here. Oh, I'm trying to find my word for it. But limitation. And then current QA contracts for active projects will be reviewed, and case by case and determinations made to or change the contractual relationship will be made. So, for anything that's really a big deal, if we look at it, we say, yeah, we really want to have that one be held by us, or we think there's a exposure there to the state, then we'll ask to take that QA contract back ourselves and then administer it. But by and large, the ones that are in flight, we're leaving with the agency. So, all right, so HB 3258, state CIO to adopt rules, policies, and standards related to IT procurement. Our initial focus was IT procurements associated with projects with a major IT component. Rules, see, we don't really, like I said before, we don't have IT projects. We have business projects that have major IT components. Rules, policies, and standards will, among other things, ensure that requests for proposals require a vendor review of the stage gate process, disclosure of proposed systems development lifecycle methodology for design, development, and implementation. May require state CIO involvement in contract execution of amendments, and remedy cure of contract performance issues. So that's one of those things right now that we don't have, is the ability to ask for cure for something when it's going off the rails. So, overview of HB 4122. Purpose of that was to provide clear legislative direction to the state contracting agencies and public corporations that IT projects meet specific criteria, required to have independent performance reviews, and the CIO and the Oregon Department of Administration rules, policies, and procedures must be followed. So, trying to standardize the executive branch activities. In general, it applies to public corporations and state contracting agencies, with the exception of SOS and state treasury. Directs the state contracting agencies and public corporations to obtain preliminary quality assurance and/or ongoing quality management services. if they exceed $5 million or meet other criteria, emphasizes that regardless of the independent procurement authority, a state contracting agency or public health corporation may have under ORS 279, the state contracting agency or public corporation must consult with and follow the rules policy. They can't get away from me. That's the sum total, you know. Required set of parties that must receive copies of quality assurance reports. The CIO, the DAS director, specific IT initiative to the director of state contracting, or if a board or commission sets policy, to the board or commission or to the governing body of the public corporation. And, of course, we've been sharing those as soon as we get them with the office of the legislative fiscal office. So that's worked out well. Next step, adopt revised state QA oversight policy, review and revise, and possibly rebid the master. Like I say, that's what we're looking at right now, is rebidding that. Complete planning and implement a project and portfolio management system. So that's in flight right now, and we're trying to get that so that everybody can see where we're at. Finalize and adopt standard project management templates. So we've had, working with the legislative fiscal office, we think we've completed more or less the core templates, and then we got to get a lot of the other you saw there were lots and lots and lots of templates out there, but there's six of them that are really core, and so we got through those. We got to get those adopted and out there, and everybody agrees to them, and then we're gonna move forward on the rest of them. So, but there's quite a few of them we have to go through. And so that's the contact information. I'll stop right there for a minute and see if there are any questions.
So I want to go back to the data center. What's mm-hmm. its name now? ETS?
Yes, sir.
And I understand that it's separate from the CIO mm-hmm. at this point. And do you think that is a good model? Does that make sense to you?
It's not a model that I'm familiar with. It's new to me. And having been here only a year, I'm not really the one that can speak authoritatively to that. It's that would be really something for Mr. Jordan. So he has a presentation and explanation around that, and it is something that's very new to me. I understand it in concept very well, though. When you're the rulemaking authority, it's very hard sometimes to this is a bad analogy, I guess, but I'll give it anyway. My brother used to own a restaurant, and it didn't do very well, because the way the restaurant worked is they would cook one thing every day, and you could, when you went in there, that's what they served that day. The menu that day was one item, you know, and you could only eat the item that they made. Well, if you didn't like it, you were out of luck, you know. I mean, the menu was that item.
Yeah, my mother was like that.
My mom is like that, yeah, too. That's right. We're eating meatloaf, you know, and that's just how it is. And if I don't feel like meatloaf, that's too bad, because I have to eat meatloaf. And so what happens is that when you're setting a policy as well as serving the organization, it's a dualistic role that's very difficult to master, you know, where you're both setting the requirement, let's say, for security, as well as providing the security. So it's almost like you're driving your own market, and I can understand the difficulty with that. And so in that concept, they've said, well, the policy piece has to be, or needs to be, separate from the customer services piece, because, you know, you can't give good customer service if you're also the rulemaking, the authority over the organization. So in principle, that's the design, and I do understand that very well. I don't understand as well the execution of it yet. I'll be very honest with you, I'm still got my training wheels on that.
Okay, well, that's a little concerning to me, and because if the rulemaking authority doesn't direct the work, then they're not really an authority, and so that concerns me some. I don't know how you make sure that the performance follows the rules if you're not in charge of it.
I appreciate that. I can understand that very well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything? No?
Anything else?
Well, there's one thing, but this goes back to another. There are a number of other bills, one bill in particular, that I am working on, and I will need your help on it.
Yes, sir.
It revolves around cameras, on body cameras on police officers,
mm-hmm.
and where we will store the video.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And who has access to it.
Yes, sir.
And who can turn them on and off. But with regarding your system, whether that's going to be, whether we will have the capacity to do something with that.
Yes, sir. In my experience, so years and years ago, I was with a municipality, Denton, Texas, and I was the CIO for them, and we did cameras in the vehicles and the recorders and the upload and all that. We couldn't do them in real time. The technology has improved considerably since then, so mm-hmm. and the networks have as well. The biggest issue that we're going to find here, I believe, is the same problem that we had in Oklahoma, which is that there's, in a municipality of 100 square miles, you can have service, wireless service available to you nearly everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
In a state with the geography that Oregon has, there are many places that you go that simply, there is simply not the connectivity. There's right. just not the, I mean, even for radio right now, there are places where there's not service. So those are considerations that, you know, as we get into it, you know, and those are limitations, and we can understand that going in. How do we design a system to compensate for that, and really where it is that we're trying to address it is going to be the, you know, one of the things that we found when we had done GPS implementations in the city of Denton, and we monitored the location of the police vehicles, there was two things that happened. One was that the number of miles on the fleet vehicles actually fell because they knew they were being monitored all the time. On the other hand, they also had an increase in the amount of time it took them to respond to a call for service, because intuitively many of the officers knew at different times, at different places where there were where calls for service would come in, you know, at different times of the day or night. And it was very helpful to them to be, and so our times for calls for service increased as a consequence of technology. There can be, and I'm not saying there aren't wonderful things, and it is important that we have the body cameras and everything. I do understand that very well, and that all these things are very important. But it does affect behavior, too, good and bad.
And behavior is one of the things we're hoping that it affects.
Yes, sir,
in some
it will.
Situations.
It
but
most certainly will.
Right now, regarding your system, I am particularly concerned about the capacity
mm-hmm.
Of the system and how you where that might go. If we have police officers constantly rolling on things, mm-hmm. How do we have the server farms ready to be able to handle that kind of thing? That's the concern that we have.
And the Chairman Riley, Representative Frederick, the way that I have, so from our cameras in the past, it was the storage that was the issue, not the servers.
Oh, okay.
So it was really the storage that was the concern. And one of the things that we're looking at in ETS, with the assessment of the utility services, is should ETS be in the storage business? Because particularly for things like video. So it actually may be better. I don't know. We'd have to look at that. We'll have to do an evaluation. But it may be better to leverage the storage that's available out there by service providers today in working out a public-private partnership, working with someone to have that storage available to the officers' cameras out in the field without having to come back to without us having to make that investment in arrays and such.
And the security issues that we're dealing with, as well. There's an argument for having a third party being involved. There's an argument for having it just within the state. So I think we haven't settled that yet, but
no, sir.
I will be talking with you about that as well.
There's the security issue and there's the control issue.
Right.
Because
Absolutely.
Associated with, because it's not only about something can be secure, but it's not in your control. And I would submit that that's equally as concerning to us, is really who has the control over it. And being able to, knowing the water safe, then, you know, if my hand's not on or your hand's not on the spigot, you know, that may not be as good of a, may not be as secure. It may not be as good of a feeling to us. So,
thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions?
Yeah, go ahead, Chair. Chair Riley, members of the committee, just wanted to remind you, Dr. Pettit did stop his presentation at the appendix. If you have a chance, and those watching the audience, he has provided a variety of information about the executive branch from a workforce perspective, the distribution of IT-related positions across state government, information about IT expenditures in a variety of different kind of core or common categories, and also a listing of information technology projects that we believe have been included in the governor's recommended budget to the legislature. So
thank
if you have time, please take a look at that.
No. So thank you for that. I was going to make mention of that, but thank you, Sean.
So anything else you want to share with us today? Or?
Well, not right now. I'm looking forward to coming back, and I'll have my EIRM, Enterprise IT Resource Management, the strategic plan, I call it. So I'll be presenting that the next time you all see me, as well as giving you the update on the budget notes that I had, the two budget notes that I was given. And if there are any questions or concerns or anything I can do for any of you, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. So thank you very much.
Okay, so if there's nothing else for the good of the order, this committee is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. I can't wait to see her.
Adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. I can't wait to see her.
Committee is adjourned.